Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
Our next guest is Dr. Margaret Harris, and she is the spokesperson for the World Health Organization. And it's today, the 7th of April, is World Health Day. So we're going to be chatting with the doctor about the significance of World Health Day and the what the future looks like, and also what's the future looking like as the state for this for state hospitals in developing countries. So we can actually go straight to our guest, Dr. Harris. Thank you for joining us on the Disco Medical Monday show.
It's a great pleasure to be with you and your listeners.
We really do appreciate you making the time. And World Health Day for the World Health Organization, I'm sure you've got quite a busy day lined up. So as we get started, could you tell us a little bit about what is World Health Day?
Indeed. Well, in fact, it's our birthday. So thank you for having me on.
Happy birthday.
To join the birthday celebration. Yep. Absolutely. And it really marks the day that the World Health Day was born. The World Health Organization, I should say, was born because it was established on this day back in 1948 officially. I mean, there'd been negotiations, etc., prior to that to achieve a World Health Organization. But it was on this day that we were born. And so this year, particularly, we're looking at how can we ensure that every human that is born and every mother who gives birth has a chance not only to survive what can be a really precarious moment, but also to have a really good, have a good beginning that leads to a really good life. So we've made it healthy start, hopeful beginning, healthy start, hopeful lives.
It's an absolutely wonderful, and it's a very, very high goal. And I think it's been quite a challenge for you guys over the years to implement that. But, you know, it's made a profound difference. Can you give us a little bit of history about the work that's been done and some of the effects that that you've seen and the benefits that you've seen or the organization has seen? There's no way I'm assuming that you were working there in 1948. Please don't get me into trouble.
Oh, that's all right. I'm very old. It's okay. I'm a granny, so it's fantastic. Fine. And I'm, and thanks to good maternity services, I'm here as well, because we looked around the room when we were looking at this campaign, and most of us, the women I'm talking about, wouldn't have survived being mothers, including myself, my first pregnancy, if we hadn't had great maternal care. And a lot of the things that are now killing women during motherhood and birth, but during the pregnancy itself, are two things: preeclampsia, which is not identifying that women, which is very, very common. I had it myself in pregnancy. Is simply you go into a state of high blood pressure often towards the end of your pregnancy, and that can kill both you and your baby. If it's identified, it can be treated and managed, and the mother and baby survive. But the other thing that happens is hemorrhage, and again, has to be identified very quickly and treated. And if you're not in a place where you can get that care, you're not going to survive it. So that's really why a lot of our work is about focusing on really good midwives, but having really great access to those midwives. You don't necessarily have to be in hospital, but you do have to be somewhere where you've got someone who recognizes the problem and gets you to a hospital, gets you to care very, very quickly. And that's the missing thing. I'm assuming you're wanting to talk about our theme this year, which is maternal and newborn care. But of course,
absolutely,
I should say the World Health Organization does many, many, many things. I think you've seen us more in emergencies and pandemics of late, but indeed we cover everything possible to ensure that every human on this planet reaches the highest state of health. That was the mandate we were given on the day we were born.
Right. And being your birthday. But I suppose it does really start, and I suppose for World Health Day, it starts with the mothers and with newborns, because that's where life starts, that's where health starts. And how important is health for the mother while she's pregnant, and optimal health as far as possible for the quality of life of the newborn and then into adulthood?
It's absolutely critical, and it's her health before she's pregnant. So in societies where women are less valued, you see greater problems with throughout the pregnancy, because one of the big issues is either malnutrition or anemia. In sub-Saharan Africa, we see malaria as a big problem, because that increases the rate of anemia again. So that again puts pregnant women are at great risk of dying from malaria or the complications of malaria, because pregnancy is a state of what we call high blood volume, much greater needs for hemoglobin, but also the heart is under twice the pressure it is for somebody who's not pregnant. So it's a really, really difficult time for the body, and everything has to be working really well. It's extraordinary that so many women do get through it, and it's quite extraordinary that in some societies they see this just as normal, but in fact it's a really balance. You're on sort of the edge of life every day, and you're bringing another life in at the same time. So looking after your women, and we have also in any society, is the best way to ensure that they A, will get through pregnancy, and B, will produce wonderful, healthy kids that will make your society stronger and more successful. We've seen that where you invest in maternal and newborn services, you get a great return, economic return. I think it's something like for every US dollar invested, you get around $9 to $20 in wow. return. So it's a great, one of the best buys in health.
So I want to touch on that when we're back from our ad break, and also look at it perhaps from the opposite side, the cost saving of taking care of pregnant moms and of newborns. So we'll touch on that as soon as we're back from our ad break. We're chatting with Dr. Margaret Harris, spokesperson for the World Health Organization. Let us have your questions on 061-895-1019, and we'll do our best to get Dr. Harris to answer them.
This is Medical Monday, brought to you with the compliments of Dis-Chem. Better health starts here.
You're listening to 101.9 High FM, and it's the Dis-Chem Medical Monday show. I'm joined in studio by Dr. Margaret Harris, spokesperson for the World Health Organization. It's the WHO's birthday, so happy birthday again, Doc, to you and your team. Before we went to ad break, we were talking about the incredible return on investment. You mentioned $9 to $20. That's absolutely unbelievable. Two things I'd like to ask. Do you have some information on sort of what is the cost of not looking after our pregnant moms before they get pregnant, during pregnancy, and with the moms and the newborns after birth?
I don't have a figure in front of me, I'm sorry, but I think it's very clear that every society that loses a mother, loses more than simply one individual. They lose a family, they lose really, the mothers and the family are the core of every human society I can think of. And you've lost someone who then would be the advocate and the person generally raising the children. So you've lost much more than an individual. So again, that's a huge socioeconomic loss, because you lose probably the potential of those children who are left behind as well. Also, you're losing your young people. Generally, with society, with economies, you see that the young people are the drivers of your society. So if you lose them, you're putting yourself behind the eight ball. The other thing we've found is, in economic terms, in societies where there is high maternal survival and high child survival, it's possible then to have fewer children. So you can space your pregnancies, and those women have the opportunity to go out and work and be part of the economy. And we see this very much in places like, say, Hong Kong, Singapore, where they went down from having very large families. Now there's equal participation in the economies by women and men. And I don't think I need to tell you, those economies are booming. You know, they're leading Absolutely. Economies in the world. And when I was a kid, they were known as poor countries.
It's so true. I think I'm reminded of Muhammad Yunus's book, Banker to the Poor, and talking about his microfinance bank in Bangladesh. And he said they only lend money to mothers, because if you give money to a father, and with all due respect to fathers, most likely they're going to go and spend that money on themselves. They'll eat, you know, use it for food for themselves or drink it or gamble or whatever. But when you give money to a mother, she spends it on the family, not on herself. And I think that just sort of reiterates the point that you were making. We have to take care of our moms, because our mothers and our grandmothers, they're the foundation of our society. And it's very evident here in South Africa. Now, Doc, chatting about that, if we look at sort of the structures that are in place, and let's say specifically South Africa, then other developing countries, what are the state of the state hospitals and the infrastructures that you're having to work with? And what would you like to see happening in the future?
A very good question. And we've actually identified things that we want the policymakers, the people managing those structures, making the decisions about what to do with them. We've identified things that can be done that will end these preventable deaths. And one of the very important one is investing in human capital. That's investing in midwives, particularly people who are at the core of society, people who are right there in the communities. Because there's no point in me saying, oh yeah, you need to have a good hospital and a good midwife, if you can't get to that person, if you can't access that person, if you're being asked to pay too much money, or that you can't find them physically, geographically, you can't get an appointment, then you're left with no help. So we need many more midwives, and we need well-trained midwives, but not just well-trained. They need to have the support of the system. So they need to be able to get the medicines, the treatments, and be able to refer. The best midwife is somebody who knows what he or she can do, but what he or she can't do. So knows when to say, I have to go and get somebody more specialist, more experienced, or with more equipment to deal with whatever the situation is. And then, yes, we know that the high concentration of mothers and babies dying are happening in places where there are humanitarian emergencies and fragile settings. Now, how do you fix that, you know, in the middle of a conflict? At least you know what you can do for women and children caught up in this, and you can provide the care even in the middle of that. It can make a very big difference. We've seen this even in horrific conflicts like Gaza. If we can get teams in who are able to help the women, you can help the women and children get through these horrendous things. The most high-impact investments are simple things like antenatal checks, just making sure every woman gets at least 8 checks and an early ultrasound. Up to 15% of women have been estimated to get a potentially life-threatening complication during pregnancy or birth, and they can be avoided if they're followed up properly. And, of course, the critical time is just before and after birth. So ensuring that all women can deliver in a good place with skilled providers and good midwife, and the ability, as I said, to be referred to via vital emergency services if dangerous complications occur.
Right. It's interesting, because my previous guest, Dr. Fahiza Patel, talking about HIV cure potentially that's being developed within South Africa or worldwide, and looking at sort of that implementation and the challenges that are being faced with HIV and TB, she was saying one of the biggest impacting factors that can be had on society is the development of midwives and more midwives. And exactly as you said, she said there's someone who knows the level of their skills and when to get help and reach out for them, say, no, you need to get to a hospital So it's interesting hearing that from both guests. Is there anything being done within South Africa, within the developing world, to develop midwives? Are there structures in place if people say, maybe that's something I would like to do, that they can get involved with?
Specifically in South Africa, I'd have to defer to somebody working there to give you that. Mm-hmm. That. But I do think so. You've got fantastic people in your universities and your network. So I am sure that you could certainly find something that you could get involved with or support to ensure that. Particularly, I expect financially support so that mm-hmm. training and equipping midwives can be improved and increased. We globally have been working very much to increase health workforce numbers. Our policymakers don't really like having large health workforces because in times, all medical things don't happen in a nice sort of routine way. You don't sort of have 10 right. cases per day of everything. So you will have days where it looks like you've got too many health workers. But too many health workers is exactly what you need because when crisis hits, you'll never have enough. And it's when crisis hits that you want them. But absolutely. It's good that you raised the mention of infectious diseases because I failed to mention that addressing the infectious diseases is also a critical. Really makes a very big difference. It's again a high impact investment. So dealing with pre-existing health conditions like anemia, HIV AIDS, malaria and diabetes will ensure that when a woman becomes pregnant, she has got the best chances of going through that pregnancy as healthily as possible.
I'd like to touch a little bit more on that when we're back from our ad break. You are listening to the Dis-Chem Medical Monday show here on 101.9 IFM. I'm chatting with Dr. Margaret Harris, spokesperson for the WHO.
This is Medical Monday, brought to you with the compliments of Dis-Chem. Better health starts here.
You've been listening to the Dis-Chem Medical Monday show here on 101.9 IFM. I'm chatting with Dr. Margaret Harris, spokesperson for the WHO. Doc, as we start to wrap up the show, and really, I mean, I could chat to you for hours on this subject. It's so important, and I'm reminded during the ad break, I was thinking my late grandfather always said to me, your number one asset is your health. It doesn't matter how much money you have, the lifestyle, how many things you have. If you don't have your health, that's the biggest impact on your quality of life. And being World Health Day, and we were chatting sort of on the work that you do, and we were touching just a little bit on infectious diseases. Can we chat a little bit more about that? And then as we wrap up, could you give us some recommendations and advice for our listeners how to ensure that they maximize their health and their responsibility for their health?
With pleasure.
So touching off on the infectious diseases.
Okay. So, infectious diseases are definitely with us. You know, back in the 60s, when vaccination started taking hold, there was actually this belief that we didn't have to worry about infectious diseases. But the natural world is just like us, is constantly evolving. And we are also encroaching on the natural world. So we are going into the forested lands and places where the infectious diseases were happily living in insects and mammals, yes. But now they're jumping over into humans. And we have to understand that we are always at risk of infectious diseases, particularly if we do things like crowd ourselves into poor housing, we don't ventilate our space as well, we don't look after our societies, we don't feed our populations adequately. And there are other things, of course, as humans we do to ourselves. Those of us who use tobacco, for instance, tobacco mm-hmm. products, you're harming your blood vessels, you're harming your heart, you're harming your lungs. So when an infectious disease, particularly a respiratory infectious disease, rolls around, you do far worse than other people. You get a lot sicker. So again, that's why we say don't use tobacco, because tobacco right. is just putting you right behind the eight ball. Even if it is a very seductive product. It's a very addictive product. It is very difficult to give up, but it's the only product that's sold that, if used as directed, will kill you. It's quite extraordinary.
It is. And if your insurance underwriters are loading you so severely, it's for very good reason.
Yeah, exactly. Because you really, I mean, we found this during the pandemic, smokers just did so much worse than non-smokers. Now, the other thing, of course, all of us have a problem carrying a bit of extra weight. I speak for myself. And getting rid of that extra weight, or preventing getting that extra weight on again, will protect you from the ravages of many of the different infectious diseases. Again, we found that people who were obese did far worse during COVID-19. Mm-hmm. They got much sicker, and too many died as well. Look at your diet. Try to avoid excess sugars, excess fats, mm-hmm. excess salts. The sugars, particularly diabetes, is rising in the world. And once again, if you have diabetes, anything else you get on top of that, you're going to do far less. You're going to struggle to get through that illness much more than another person. Physical exercise helps a lot, not just physically. I'm not saying that you have to go madly to the gym, but having half an hour where you can do some sort of exercise, even if it's walk somewhere, helps you mentally. Really helps.
Absolutely.
Increase the circulation of the blood in your brain, so you're actually thinking more clearly. But it helps you to just clean your head of all the stressful things. So often you feel, after a really bad day, you feel exhausted mentally, and you don't want to do any kind of exercise because you just want to lie down and sleep in front of the TV or something. But actually taking that half hour at that mm-hmm. time when you feel at your worst will actually make you feel much, much better and will do so much for you. So those are a few tips.
Absolutely fantastic. And I think the thing for me that I love about exercise, it's proper me time. Dr. Margaret Harris, thank you so much for joining us, spokesperson for the WHO. You've been listening to 101.9 High FM, and a big thank you to Craig on the buttons, Sina, my producer. My name is Nicholas Ingle. Thank you for listening to the Dis-Chem Medical Monday Show. I'll see you all next week.